Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Dinner is tough for military families. During deployments, the empty seat at the table makes their absence visible. Sarah Smiley and her three young sons faced that nightly void back in December of 2011 when Navy pilot Dustin Smiley left for 13 months in Djibouti, Africa. So they decided to fill it. Each week, they asked guests to join them for a casual dinner. First up was Senator Susan Collins. 53 weeks later, they dined with neighbors, school teachers, artists, politicians, sports stars, and R2-D2. Through those meals, the Smileys survived holidays, a flooded basement, a lost wedding ring, and the daily challenges of playing single mom to three boys. They also built a community of friends they would not have known otherwise. Sarah Smiley is a syndicated newspaper columnist, and her new book is called Dinner with the Smileys. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So how old were your boys when Dustin first left for that year?
Let's see. Our youngest was 4, and our oldest, my husband left the day before our oldest's 11th birthday, and the week of Thanksgiving. And then just a few days later, our middle son turned 9.
So that's a bit of a sting. Two big birthdays that your husband wasn't around for
in a holiday. But, you know, it's interesting. Military families, a lot of people say that, how many birthdays did he miss? How many anniversaries? And those certainly are difficult times. But you find at the end of the deployment that the worst times were the ordinary days.
Yeah. And you write a lot about those ordinary days. And you let us know from the jump that you don't like to cook. You don't like small talk.
No.
So having dinner guests once a week was actually your idea initially, but then you kind of pushed it off the burner and it got pushed forward a little to make it happen. How did it happen?
Right. Dinner time's always been really important to us. And we always sit down, the five of us, at the dinner table. And I knew from my husband's previous deployments that that's the hardest time to have him gone. So I knew that. And at one of the last dinners before my husband deployed, one of the boys said, it'll be strange not to have dad at the dinner table. So I just reacted to that, already anxious about it. And I said, well, we won't leave his seat empty. We'll invite people. But I meant we'll invite their friends. We'll have my friends over, our neighbors. I certainly didn't think it would turn into what it did turn into. But it snowballed with the boys. They started saying, oh, could we invite a policeman? Could we invite our teachers? Could we, you know, just kept going and going. But my husband was really worried about us being in Maine. Would we be forgotten? Would people really understand what we were going through? So he was the one that said, I really do hope you'll invite people over because I want you to stay connected to the community and don't isolate yourself. Reach out for help.
Mm-hmm. And your son, Ford, your oldest son, wrote to Senator Collins and she came.
She did, yes. She was the first person that Ford wanted to invite. His letter was awesome because he said, my name's Ford Smiley. These are, you know, I have a mom and a dad. It was just very cute, like fifth grader, I think he was when he wrote that. And I thought, no way is she going to be able to have time to come. But I thought it was a good exercise for him to learn how to write a formal letter, how to reach out to your representatives. And then sure enough, 2 weeks later, I got a call from Washington, D.C. that said that the office nearly cried when they read Ford's letter and that Senator Collins would be honored to come sit in his seat. And what I said was, oh, great. But inside, I was thinking, oh, no, what did I do? Because I don't even own linens. You know, I gave Senator Collins a paper towel to put in her lap as a napkin. I was totally unprepared and I don't cook. But very quickly, I learned that when you invite people to your house, they're not coming for a 4-star meal. If they wanted that, they'd go to a restaurant. They're not coming for a Martha Stewart home tour. If they wanted that, they'd go to a tour of homes. When they accept an invitation to come to your house, it's because they want to get to know you.
Well, you sometimes did eat out in restaurants.
We did.
You ate at the place where the governor lives, the Blaine House.
The Blaine House.
Restaurants, a bookstore, mm-hmm. Mount Katahdin.
Yeah.
Once. Is there any dinner of these 52 that stands out for you as the most memorable?
Actually, the one, when I started out, I didn't think I would write a book, but I knew I would write some of my columns about it. When I knew I would write a book, in fact, the very first chapter I wrote was chapter 6, and it was after dinner number 17, so we were supposed to have dinner with my elderly neighbor who had gone to assisted living, I kept pushing off the dinner because we had other guests that had pressing schedules, and I felt like Gloria wasn't going anywhere. So we had scheduled it for April, and I called the assisted living facility just to make sure everything was set up for our visit, and I found out that she had passed away about 2 weeks or a week before we were going to come. And I asked the boys what we wanted, what they wanted to do, because I didn't want to replace her dinner. And they said, well, that they wanted to go to the assisted living facility anyways and eat with her friends and neighbors. So we ended up sitting with a man and his wife who had Alzheimer's. And at that dinner, the man started to get very emotional and told me that he had been reading my columns about being lonely at dinner and that he understood because even though he had never deployed or anything, and he had had his wife for, I think they'd been married 60 years, that for the last 2 to 3 years, he had eaten alone because she had Alzheimer's. That's when it struck me that this story, what we were going through, wasn't really about the military. It wasn't really about our family. And so right then I came home and I wrote that chapter, and I knew that this was a bigger story that I wanted to share with the world to inspire people to reach out to someone and ask them to dinner.
And that was Frank and Anita were their names?
Frank and Anita,
that's what
yeah.
I'm remembering. The Katahdin dinner that I did mention, dinner number 35.
Yeah.
Which it seemed like a real watershed for you and your eldest son, mm-hmm. Ford. And now he seemed to take your husband's absence the hardest. How did you handle that?
Yes, he was very bitter in the beginning.
He was 11, wasn't he?
11. Yeah. And just kind of on that cusp of pre-adolescence and a lot of emotions going on and a lot of slamming doors saying he hated me, wished I was on deployment instead of dad. But through the year, I felt like Ford and I became much closer during that time. He grew up. He really took on the role of helping to take care of his brothers. And the Mount Katahdin trip, he really fought me on that. He didn't want to go. He thought it was a waste of time. It was going to be too long. But he loved it, and I loved the experience. And it was kind of a bonding moment for the two of us. So was also the dinner where we went and put flags on the veterans' graves with Congressman Michio from Maine. And my son Ford and I went off together as a team. And the people who were handing out the flags to us gave us specific instructions, and they said, each service member gets a flag. And I asked the question, their spouses too? And they said, no, only the service members. And I knew what they meant because then they might run out of flags. But I told Ford, come on, you and I are going to go do this set of flags. And when I walked away, Ford said, we're going to go put flags on the spouses' graves, aren't we? And I said, yes. But we put them in between the spouse and the service member. So that was kind of a bonding moment, too.
Sarah Smiley is with us. She's been called the Irma Bombeck for the military set, and we're talking about her family's experience having guests for dinner for the year that her husband was deployed abroad. It's a story told in her book, Dinner with the Smileys. Well, Sarah, it's amazing reading about what you do. You're working on your master's. Mm-hmm. You're teaching journalism at the University of Maine. Raising these three kids by yourself, I mean, did you ever just get exhausted and dread the idea of, oh, God, I'm going to have another dinner that I have to get together this week?
I did. There were lots of times that I wanted to cancel. But very quickly, the dinners kind of became life rafts for us. It's very hard to think about having your spouse gone for a year. But when you can take it week by week, it's kind of the day by day mentality. It made it that much easier. And so I put my focus on the dinners. You know, if I can just get to this next dinner, then I only have that many more weeks until he comes home. But there were plenty of times that I thought, I have nothing to cook. And as you know, in the book, I cooked lasagna for about 90% of the dinners. And sometimes I went into the dinners already defeated and tired and thinking, this isn't going to be good. This is a train wreck. Sometimes I thought our guests would be boring. You know, I thought, I don't know how I'm going to make this dinner exciting for the boys. But it never happened. Every single dinner showed us something different, whether we learned something, whether it was funny, whether it was surprising, challenging, emotional. And I always ended the dinners feeling refreshed, energized, and glad that I did it.
And your boys sort of hold their own with the guests. That's kind of amazing to watch. You know, they're picking up for each other. There's a kind of loyalty and cheering on of each other. You know, there's a little bickering as well. They are three boys, after all. What do you think is possible, Sarah, around a dinner table that just doesn't happen elsewhere?
I think it's the great equalizer, sitting down to the dinner table. We had a lot of high-profile people like senators and congressmen, mayors and governors. But it didn't matter what their title was or what their status was. When they sat down at our dinner table and we were passing them the ketchup or the Parmesan cheese or whatever it was hard to think of them as anything else but entirely human. And I feel like we bonded with people over the dinner table in ways that we couldn't have if we hadn't sat down to dinner. Mm. And in fact, when we had our dinner with Governor LePage, who is not very popular in our
Paul
state,
LePage,
yes,
okay.
Who's not very popular in our state, I got a lot of pushback from people saying they couldn't believe I would go to have dinner with him. And so I wrote a column about it addressing that through the boys' eyes to them, he was just a man to come have dinner with. They knew he was the governor. They respected that. But he was a human being. And they judged him on a different level than through politics. They thought that was one of their favorite dinners because he played hide and go seek in the Blaine house. They served chicken tenders and ketchup. And they didn't care what his politics were. And they taught me through that we should judge people on who they are, not their job or their title.
Well, Dustin does return. I mean, I was blubbering at the end of the book at his return, which is not only a reason to be glad to have him back, but maybe on some level to think, oh, God, I don't have to do these dinners anymore. But you've kept it up.
I've kept it up. Well, because it's kind of become part of our culture now. And, you know, I mentioned that we had had some high profile guests. But what I like to tell people who have wanted to maybe do the same sort of thing or not every week, but, you know, reach out and invite someone, is that the most memorable moving dinners we had were with people whose names you won't know until you read the book. They weren't the high profile people. Mm-hmm. They certainly were memorable dinners, but just this experience of the community and people that we got to know, that's kind of become part of the boys' world. So even when Dustin came home, the boys kept it going. They said, well, if it had been a while that it had just been the five of us at the table, they'd say, when are we going to invite someone to dinner? In fact, right now, while I'm here with you, mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a role reversal because my husband is home with the kids uh-huh. for the week while I'm going around doing book signings. And so they're doing a dinner with the Smileys tonight to fill my seat. And
who are they inviting?
They're inviting two men from our community who are Mormons, uh-huh. actually. One owns an airplane company and one is a dentist. The dinners also were an opportunity to expose the boys to all different types of things, you know, different professions, different ways of living, all sorts of things. This is the first dinner I've never been part of. And I feel a little bit like leaving a baby with the babysitter for the first time. You know, I keep calling my husband and going,
Did you put the lasagna in?
Yeah, I'm like, is everything okay? Are you all set? And so it'll be interesting to see tonight how that goes. And I'll post about it on our Dinner with the Smileys Facebook page.
Thank you so much
Thank you.
Speaking with us.
Thanks.
Sarah Smiley, a syndicated newspaper columnist, journalism teacher, and author of Dinner with the Smileys, One Military Family, One Year of Heroes, and Lessons for a Lifetime. Sarah's giving readings throughout New England, including the Perfect Wife restaurant in Manchester, Vermont, on Saturday. There's much more at her website, and we've got a link at wordofmouthradio.org. And from the family dining room to one of the most historic kitchens in the country, we're going to hear the largely untold stories of the first cooks to feed America's founding fathers, the enslaved chefs of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. That story, when word of mouth continues, after a short break.